This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and rewatch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is, got a letter from my darling by one of my all-time favorite musical acts of any city, the Memphis Jug Band, in honor of the second half, mostly, of my quarterly Grizzlies mailbag, which went up yesterday.
We'll talk about that mailbag. I've tweeted it out. Couple things first. Happy birthday, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Are you, Jeffrey and I speculated, you're probably a big birthday guy. Like, you got a big birthday week or month, maybe even. No, we're joking. What do you do? What will happen? How will you celebrate your birthday, or will you be celebrated on your birthday?
So, unfortunately, we have my wife's work Christmas party this afternoon, which we'll have to attend. So, happy birthday to me to go to the small talk at the Christmas party. But then we actually do have, my wife and I have reservations tonight at a restaurant we've both been wanting to try in Minneapolis called Awamni, which is the most, probably the most significant indigenous restaurant in the country. And it actually won the James Beard Award for Best New Restaurant in America 2 years ago when it opened. And like the New Yorker did a story on it that just called it the best restaurant in America.
Really?
So we've really been wanting to check that out, and we have reservations tonight, so I'm looking forward to that.
Have you studied the menu in advance, Chris? I mean, do you have a thought about what when you go to a truly superb restaurant, do you think about what's on the menu in advance and what you might get?
Even when I go to not so superb restaurants, I study the menu in advance. Typically, so yeah, you got a pregame. You got a pregame. You got to do your prep. It's very important.
So what's the thing to get?
What I'm not quite certain about is sort of how it works. The menu looks very similar to, say, like the Lobbyist in Memphis. And so I assume that everything is going to be shareable. There's a section that's all like, they don't call it produce or whatever, like the Lobbyist does, but it's all like plant-based. It's all like vegetable, you know, based things or non-meat things. And then there's another section that's basically your proteins or your meat dishes, and then there's some other stuff on there. And I'm really, I'm not a vegetarian at all, but I'm just more interested in the non-meat stuff. I really would like to sample a lot of different stuff. They do a dish. I actually referenced this in the mailbag, oddly. No, actually, I didn't. I ended up not answering that question. I was going to, but I decided my answer wasn't interesting enough. But there's a dish that they're famous for that I've never had there, but I've tried to make it on my own just based on magazine reading about it that I'll finally have. And it's like a roasted sweet potato with like a maple chili crisp, chili oil situation going on. They have a berry cobbler that's supposed to be very good. There's lots of corn and like squash based dishes. And like the proteins are all like bison and elk. And I mean, we may get duck. I really like duck. They have duck on the menu. But the thing about this restaurant is like, they're very serious about it. And they don't use any ingredients at all that did not exist on this continent before the Europeans arrived.
Wow.
There's no dairy. There is no wheat flour. There is no cane sugar. There's no beef. There's no pork. It's all things that existed on the continent prior to the arrival of Europeans.
I wonder, though,
they only use those ingredients.
I wonder even if the things that they do use have changed since the arrival of Europeans.
I'm sure.
You know, like,
yeah, no,
potatoes
right.
are not the
it
same.
It sounds good. It sounds good, but the details got to be more complicated than that. But, like, they really go out of their way. Like, it's a guy, the guy who's the chef who owns the restaurant, his name's Sean Sherman, but he goes by the name The Sous Chef, sort of a joke on, you know, it's S-I-O-U-X instead of S-O-U-S.
Right, I see, right.
But they, I mean, they get a lot of their stuff from Native American providers. Like, they get all their bison from a Lakota, like, you know, group in Minnesota. And, like, it's very, there's nothing else quite like it near as I can tell. Whether it's good or not, I'll find out.
Good.
It's got a great reputation.
Well, we want a full report. Okay, and then secondly, the Peanut Gallery, meaning Drew Hill, has said he wants me to ask you, Creed Summer of 99 tour is coming to the FedEx Forum on July 27th with special guests, whoever, Three Doors Down and Mammoth something. And he wants me to ask you, this is by special request, your thoughts on Creed.
That whole tour sounds like absolute torture to me, actually. That is. I think Dick Cheney came up with that. That tour. I'm not a Creed guy. No. That whole strand of like hard rock where like the singers all sound constipated. Like they're saying, like sound like, you know, second, third generation versions of Eddie Vedder, and they sound like they really need some X-Lax. Like, not my
not
guy.
Your thing. Okay. Moving on. You do have a mailbag, which, given that we have a whole week here without games, we might parse through slowly this week. But let's start with, what is the Grizzlies' ceiling? And I asked this, by the way, and you answered it in the mailbag, but they have a, over at The Athletic, they have first quarter grades, basically. And they have tiers, and their tiers, their top tier is, this is a guy named Law Murray, who I don't know. But top tier.
He's their Clippers writer is his main thing.
I see. Top tier is top contenders, and it is the Cavs at one, the Celtics at two, Oklahoma City at three, the Mavs at four, and the Grizzlies at five, and that is the end of the top tier. What's the Grizzlies' ceiling, and do they belong in that tier, or they should they be in the same tier as, say, the Timberwolves and the Nuggets?
I'm not sure they quite belong in that tier. I think the placement might be right, but I think I might draw a line between four and five there. When I was asked to see the team, my answer essentially was making the NBA Finals. And like, in theory, like, they could win. If you make the NBA Finals, you can win the NBA Finals. I take the question as, like, a reasonable ceiling, right? Not what is an expectation, not what is possible, and not even, like, what your like, baseline, like, pass-fail is. But, like, what is, like, your reasonable hope? What can this team reasonably achieve that you wouldn't feel like, oh, my God, did they really do that? And I think with this team, it is make the NBA Finals. Now, I think it's a little bit higher for, like, Dallas and Oklahoma City. I think those teams probably have more of an expectation to make the NBA Finals this season instead of a reasonable hope. So I do think there's a difference there. So I would probably put the Grizzlies second tier, not first tier, but maybe right at the top of the second tier, you know, with New York probably.
If their ceiling is not what you expect them to get, but is in fact their ceiling, how many other teams have NBA final? How many other teams in the West have NBA Finals as their ceiling?
Well, reasonable ceiling.
Yeah, as their reasonable
ceiling. I'm trying to make a distinction. Like if everything breaks right, like, you know, 10 different teams could be in the West Finals.
No, but reasonable ceiling.
But, yeah. But I just don't think Scooter Houston's been, I don't think of them the same way.
Right.
So I would say no Houston, no Clippers, no Lakers unless they make a trade. No Spurs, no Kings. I'm looking at the list. I think no to the Suns, just because I think that team is too shaky. So I think Wolves, Nuggets, Thunder, Mavs, obviously. Grizzlies, I've stipulated. I think the Nuggets and the Wolves, if they get it together, definitely have the NBA Finals upside. And I need to say no on Golden State. I just don't think the team's talented enough around Curry.
Right.
So I'm going to say five teams.
It is interesting. Like, you're exactly right, though. If they make the finals, they can win the finals just because some can sprain an ankle, right? I mean, you never know.
Right.
So that then sort of becomes their ceiling. Okay, related question. How many other, like, are there other Grizzlies teams that have had a ceiling of the NBA? In other words, is this the highest ceiling of any version of the Grizzlies that existed before?
Maybe. It's easy in retrospect to say yes, because none of those other teams got to that point,
yep.
Right? I would say, you know, the year that they were second in the, they were second in the West 2 years, but one of those years with the Morant stuff and the Adams and the Clark injury, we all knew going in that the upside of that team was lower than their seeding. I think there was hope they might beat the Lakers in that series, but no one was thinking about team in the NBA Finals. The year before, they were second in the West. They won 56 games, but they were just so young. And so I don't, you know, maybe that team had that kind of upside, maybe. I think you go back to the grit and grind years. There are two or three teams there. I think the first year they really had that upside. I don't think we knew it until they were eliminated. Basically, I don't think we knew until
that was
they
the year
lost
that Dallas went to the like in the end. Because sometimes they're colossus.
Yeah.
Your ceiling is limited if there's a colossus
right.
in the way, right? But they're
that was the year the Dallas went through. They lost in Game Six, second round, Game Seven, I think, second round. Game seven, second round to the Thunder, and having lost one of those games in triple overtime, going into that playoffs as the eighth seed, I don't think we thought about that team having that ceiling. In retrospect, I think it did, but we didn't know it in the moment. And then the year, you know, maybe 2015, the year they lose in six in the second round to the Warriors. But I didn't really feel that way, you know.
Yep. All right. Same kind of historic question. What team, and this was an interesting exercise, someone asked you, what team, not Grizzlies team, but team in NBA history, does this most resemble? What Grizzlies team, what other team does this team call to mind? Who'd you think about there, and who'd you settle on?
Yeah, I spent an hour or so like playing around with that question. I sort of had fun with it. And so my starting point, just sort of my process, was to look at teams that whose best player was a young, I think I set it to like 27 and under, whose best player was a young, dynamic guard, lead guard, small guard, and that made the playoffs with that kind of player as their best player. And there aren't that, you know, it's not, when you set at certain levels of achievement in terms of like, you know, the numbers that guy's putting up, there's not really that many of those. And so I sort of started from there and worked my way down, and I considered a few teams that I mentioned, but the one I settled on, which is going kind of way back at this point, are the Phoenix Suns teams right before they got Barkley, in the late 80s, early 90s. That team made the NBA Finals after trading for Charles Barkley, so I think maybe people don't remember, even if people remember much at all, but to the degree they do, they probably don't remember what that team was like before that trade. That team made the conference finals twice in 4 years before they got Charles Barkley. And the three best players on that team, three best starters at least, were Kevin Johnson, who was like made all-star teams and made MVP ballots as like a dynamic athletic point guard.
Right.
Tom Chambers, who was a 20-point scorer, combo, power forward center, and Jeff Hornacek, who was a slick shooting scoring guard. That team had good depth. They were top 10 4 years in a row on offense and defense. They were top 10 pace. Really similar, I think.
Now, Marley wasn't on that team. Was Marley later?
Marley over the course of the 4 years, yes. But Marley was on that team by the end of that 4 year run. He came aboard sort of in the process.
All right. And we'll wrap up with the most likely to be traded question that you were asked. And you seemed a little
Yeah, I was not
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you seemed a little begrudging to wade in here on this already, but go ahead. Yeah,
I'm just not super enthusiastic about the trade discussion now. And people, no matter how good things are, there are a lot of fans, and I sympathize because I'm one of these sickos too. I get it. But no matter how good things are, people are always looking ahead to the next transaction period. Well, like, what's going to be the trade? What's going to be free agency?
Okay, rather than addressing it fully, which we'll do tomorrow, let's do this. Because you talked about, you mentioned fleetingly Cam Johnson. Cam Johnson is the player that everyone is obsessed with obtaining. So let's just discuss Cam Johnson. Why is he the target? And what is the likelihood of that happening? A, being traded at all from Brooklyn, and B, winding up in Memphis. And then we'll wind up there.
Well, you know, think about all the time they spent, like, they and the team and fan base spent thinking about Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby, right?
Right.
Then those guys finally get traded somewhere else. Cam Johnson's sort of next man up on that group of players, right? The big wing who can shoot threes and play defense. He's not the level of defender those guys are, but a better shooter probably. A little bit different mix, but similar kind of player. And he's, you know, he's not an old vet, but he's like in his late 20s. He's been around, right? You know, he was on that Phoenix team that made the NBA Finals a few years ago. And so this team, when you look at it, does not really have that player still. The 6'8 wing, not the 6'3 Marcus Smart or 6'2 or the 6'5 Vince Williams, like the 6'8 wing who can play defense, can drill threes, and has playoff experience. That player doesn't exist on this roster. And I do think that kind of player would be very useful to this team, especially come playoff time. Cam Johnson's on a team, Brooklyn, that's supposed to be tanking, but like keeps winning games, unfortunately for them. I think with him, I think that team is going to sell at some point. He's under contract beyond this season, and even though he's a vet, he's still a young vet in his 20s. It's not clear they're going to want to move him. He may be part of the next Brooklyn team that they try to win with.
He makes north of $20 million, right? I think he made north of $20 million, and he's had health issues. Although it's interesting when you read Nets writers, they are they also like sell now because he's having an electric season. He's been a little injury prone. He probably isn't part of the long term. So let's get 5 first round picks or whatever we think. It's an interesting impulse that I've seen, or maybe it's just Nets fandom that I've sort of dipped into, are like, let's capitalize now.
Right.
So
I think he's going to be, he's an obvious name. I mean, he's a name that we've been mentioning with the Grizzlies and one, and he showed up on lists like this for me for 2 years, you know, like it's not a new concept.
Right.
But he is a guy who he is one of the guys who makes the most sense, if not the guy who makes the most sense. I feel like we can revisit that a month. I doubt anything happens in the next month on that front.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing how the dinner went tomorrow. But happy birthday, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You can read his mailbag over at the Daily Memphian, and we'll talk about more of the questions that are in the mailbag. He's got a 2-part mailbag, and I'd urge you to read all of it. It's fabulous, as is typical. We'll do that more tomorrow because we got a break from the Grizzlies. Are you? This is, you know, it's not a bad time to be breaking for the Grizzlies. You know why? Because we can bask a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, it's in some ways you want to keep it going when you're rolling, but when you're second in the West, you've just beaten Boston and then blown out the like, and people are putting you in tier one. I don't mind taking a breather right now and
think back and read,
looking around at the rest of the world and saying, praise how up. Do you like us now? You know? So there you go. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Before then, I will tell you, if you are getting engaged, well, congratulations. It's a magical time. And secondly, do not hesitate, get yourself to Robert Irwin Jewelers, and they will walk you through the process. 46 years in Memphis. Came down from New York, looked around and said, you know what? Let's join this community. Let's dig into this community. And so for 46 years, nearly 5 decades, they have been helping people celebrate holidays, engagements, anniversaries, birthdays, congratulations, I love yous, even I'm sorrys, whatever it is, at Robert Irwin Jewelers. And if you are shopping for a diamond engagement ring, well, it's the number one place to go, including and featuring the meant-to-be guarantee. So confident the Love Your Diamond engagement ring purchase, they offer a 365-day, no-questions-asked return policy. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers, locations across the Memphis community. I go to the one across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you. Again, it's bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, or online at rijewelers.com. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday. When we return, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
All right, back at the Jeff Calkins Show. It's that time. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, our man in Washington, D.C., although he's not in Washington, D.C. right now, our man in Washington, D.C., Charles Fishman, joins us. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, joins me now from Miami Beach. Aren't you having a time of it, Charles?
Well, let's be clear. South Beach. We don't want anybody to be confused about which part of Miami Beach we're in, because South Beach is kind of the hipper part. And at any moment, the cable guy.
Oh no!
Are we still having this conversation? The cable guy who was due at 10:30 Eastern, 9:30 Memphis time, and has not appeared. Now, an hour and 5 minutes
later. What happens when he appears? Do you hang up on us? Is that the end of Fish on Friday on Tuesday?
Well, I think we'll see. We'll see how we do. I'll put you on hold briefly to take the call from the doorman. It's a doorman building. And then I'll let him in, and we'll see if he can function alone for 10 minutes. But we have so much to get to today.
All right, we'll get to it then.
I want to stop 1 second and say the polar bear item at the end is vital, because it's going to help people going forward in the season.
But it's really up to you how fast you get through everything else. So what do you want to tell us?
First of all, I want to say, go to Wikipedia and give a little bit of money. I don't pitch many things during the year. I pitch almost nothing. I mean, you could buy One Giant Leap, the great bestseller by Charles Fishman, and a surprise on every page. But what I'd really like you to do is give $5 or $10 to Wikipedia. I've used Wikipedia half a dozen times already this morning to get ready for radio. I use it all the time. I sort of mocked it 20 years ago when it was born. How could an encyclopedia written by ordinary people be useful or good or reliable? It is all of those things. It's imaginative. I think I've said this before. One of my favorite pages is the page that tells you the length of every river in the world in miles and kilometers and the water flow, and it's updated. I'm always looking at land areas and GDPs and all kinds of stuff like that. Only 2% of people who use Wikipedia in the United States ever give any money. And here's how many people use it. 100 million Americans a day. That's the equivalent of almost half the adults in America using it every day. 100 million a day use it. If 4% would give, that would double. The people who do Wikipedia, by and large, don't get paid. There's a small staff to maintain the system. But the money goes to the charity that protects Wikipedia. And Wikipedia really is good, reliable, crowdsourced information. I'll make the same offer I made last year. If you tag me on Twitter, on X, with a screenshot of your donation, I'll match your donation. I mean, you know, up to a certain point.
All right, so that's good. That's that pitch.
So that's by Wikipedia. I would love to buy my wife a car with a ribbon. You guys zeroed in on. I do have this fantasy. She would, if I walked her outside to the driveway on Christmas morning and said, she just told me what she wanted for Christmas. She wants binoculars because now she's got a balcony. she wants to look out. But if I had a brand new car parked in the driveway, I mean, that would be an epic story of the ages. But I got to say, I've always wondered how you, exactly the Saturday Night Live skit, not just the money, but how do you buy your wife a car she's going to love without her having a look at it? That just seems like a ballsy.
I think you can only do it if you know there's a dream car she wants. Like if you knew that she wanted a Lexus or a Mercedes, whatever class,
or whatever it is. Or if you've gone shopping for cars and visited a bunch of cars and then said, well, you know, we probably can't afford it at this point, but at least we know what we like. So I'm like, anyway, I would like to do that. Living in Miami Beach, I want to say, we're literally in an apartment. Well, we have no internet, and my wife has been living here for 9 days. So that's, we're camping. It's, I would say it's 90% unfurnished. When the sun sets, we don't quite have enough lights, and you sort of think, oh, the sun is setting. Maybe it's time to put out the campfire and go to sleep. But the one thing, and we only have one coffee maker, which means I make my wife's Colombian coffee, then I pour it in a container, then I make my hazelnut coffee.
That's really hard living. Hard living there, Charles. What's the one thing you like? We got to get to
this. The one thing I love, automatic ice maker. We never had an automatic ice maker when I was a kid. It was one of those things I just thought, when I grow up, I am going to have an automatic ice maker.
You don't have one in D.C. You don't have one in D.C.
Our refrigerator in D.C. is the tiniest family size refrigerator. It's a little bigger than a hotel refrigerator, not much.
It's funny, though. The best thing about Miami Beach then has nothing to do with Miami Beach.
No, that's...
You have an ice maker. That's great.
I rode my bike in 22-degree weather 4 days last week, so there is the fact that it is not 22 degrees, but I just love the ice maker, and I'm using it.
They caught Luigi Mangione. He's the alleged shooter. What do you want to say about this?
Yeah, I want to correct one thing. Well, look, I mean, there's most everything that needs to be said has been said 147 times, right?
Yeah.
If you watch cable news or you read X or any of them. One thing that's going around that isn't quite right, he was not reported to the police by a McDonald's employee. He was spotted by a customer, a fellow restaurant patron at that McDonald's in Altoona, and the customer went to a staff member in the McDonald's. So he was actually spotted by a fellow customer. There's now been released by police an image. Apparently, I'm not clear whether it's from a patron or a security camera at the McDonald's of him just before police approached him with a blue surgical mask hanging from one ear, eating a McDonald's hash brown. So that's the kind of detail that's irrelevant that we have learned about.
People have become obsessed with this one murder upon all the other, rather than all the other murders in the city. But for obvious reasons.
Yes. Yeah, let me get to that point in a minute. But there was a $60,000 reward.
Yeah, so who gets it? Does the patron get it?
$50,000 from the FBI, $10,000 from the New York City police. Well, I would assume that the person who actually went to the McDonald's employee would be the person who would get it, and maybe you'd give some to the McDonald's employee. Guess what?
Somebody's
at the door. Stand by.
Oh, my goodness. He's going to be on. We're going to put Charles on hold, Jeffrey, the cable guy. This is live radio. The cable guy is at the door. Have you been transfixed, Jeffrey, by the story of Luigi Mangione? I have been.
Not really. I mean, like, I'm aware of, like, when a big
break happens.
Right. Yeah, like I read yesterday.
That he was arrested. Did you read all about his bio?
I know that he went to a prep school in Maryland, and then he went to UPenn, I believe.
It is kind of amazing. He's from he's from a wealthy family in Baltimore. He went to the Gilman School, which is like MUS, basically, for Baltimore. And then he went to University of Pennsylvania, computer science. He taught it. He led some program, not as a full professor or anything, but at Stanford.
I believe Charles says he's back.
Can you hear me?
Okay, so I put you on hold, so you're back.
Quite the gilded life. Yes, okay, go ahead, yes.
Lewis is here. Lewis, the cable man, is here, and he's assessing the situation.
Okay. Who gets the award? I'd split it. I'd split it between the two. One guy had tagged him, and one guy made the call.
Okay, thank you. Something like that. But you often don't read the fine print. It says arrest and conviction. It always says that. And so even if they get the reward, they are many months from, not months, they're probably years from seeing any of that money. And there's a process. You can't nominate yourself. The law enforcement people have to nominate you. So I hope they get it. I was struck, I will say. I'm a member of the media, of course. There were days last week where the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal all had running live blogs about what was happening in this case. And Cable was covering it wall to wall with breaks for other news. And I'll be honest, it's a dramatic story. It's a sad story all the way around. But it's not a story that has any relevance to any of us. It does not touch any of us.
No. It's only covered at that level because people are interested in it. So the question is, as a journalist, how much...
question is why we couldn't devote a week to covering Social Security finances that way.
Because no one would click
with
on
imagination.
It.
No, with imagination and energy and creativity, then we'd know something about our Social
no
Security.
No one would.
System.
No, you could not no, cover Social Security in a way that would make it as interesting as a guy walking up and shooting someone in Manhattan and then leaving a backpack with Monopoly money on it. Like
I want to know about the Monopoly money. I do want to know about the Monopoly money. I want to know about the guy's back surgery. But I one thing that caught my attention after all this was what's happening with the with security for corporate executives. Here's something that sort of happened just below the radar screen, didn't get much attention at all. This murder happened Wednesday morning, 6 days ago, after Fish on Friday on Tuesday of last week. Mm-hmm. That day, early afternoon East Coast, dozens of corporate security chieftains, executives, dozens of people managing corporate security got on a nationwide Zoom call with each other within hours to talk about what to do, to talk about what the meaning of this was. So... this killing definitely got the attention of
I should think
of the people.
Does your
at
typical
that level.
CEO have security?
That's a really, really, really good question. We don't actually know. What we know is that there are firms that provide security to 80% of the Fortune 100. Companies aren't required to report their security costs for their staff, except if they're providing security to them outside of workplace hours. 25% of the S&P 500, those are the 500 biggest public companies, 25% of them pay for security for their CEOs outside of work hours. So you have to assume that all those people are getting security during work hours. 13% pay for security for non-CEO executives. And in fact, Brian Thompson, the man who was killed, who was a senior executive at United Health, he had a security team. He just wasn't using it that day in New York. So there's been this huge upwelling of demand for security. All the security reform firms, especially on the East Coast in New York, report they can't answer the phone fast enough. A couple interesting things came out of that. The New York Times said it costs about $250,000 a year to provide 24-hour security to one person. $250,000 a year to provide 24-hour security. It
seems cheap, honestly. Seems cheap.
Seems cheap.
That's three 8-hour days in every day, so that's right there. If your security guards are making $70,000, $210,000 of it's gone right literally just off the top.
Well, but it also means you're only paying men and women with guns whose job is to, you know, to protect you from death, $70,000 a year, which isn't even, you know, the average wage.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, absolutely right. How skilled and expert could they be? They're not,
so
you know.
I would think it would actually cost more. Anyway, it's kind of amazing. The number one company paying for security outside of work is Facebook, Meta, $24 million a year. Also, not that much really. Jump way down to Alphabet, $7 million, Blackstone, $6 million. A lot of that money goes to private jet, but also staffing people. You know, the truth is, it's kind of glamorized on TV, but you might think, well, why would Brian Thompson, who has security, had threats, why would he be walking around Manhattan without a security guard? It is actually really uncomfortable and inconvenient and odd to have someone with you all the time,
sure,
watching everything you do. And I want to go to the bathroom now. I need to pee again. You know, I don't log in when I pee. You know what I mean? It's just
right.
The whole thing. And so at 6:30 in the morning, why would he have thought on the, you know, three blocks from his conference hotel?
We don't know why. One of the things we don't know that I'm interested in is why Luigi Mangione. I mean, first of all, what his motivation was, what happened there. We know it probably has something to do with insurance, obviously. But like,
right.
what sent him spinning off? He lost tech with his family. Like, what happened to him?
Right.
But I'm also interested in how does he settle on this guy at this moment? So here's the other question I had. We've obviously seen this outpouring of vitriol towards health insurance companies, and a lot of dark humor about all of this. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the really interesting thing that feels like it's kind of getting passed over in just the characterization you provided is there's been an outpouring of horror stories. There's been an outpouring of people saying, do you know what my health insurance company did to me, to my child who had leukemia? I was struck by a nurse on Twitter right after the shooting, literally last Wednesday, who said, I'm an ER nurse, and I don't condone anybody committing violence against anybody because I see it every day. But I have to say, what I see in the ER, the ways that health insurance companies torture patients, refuse to cover care that they obviously need, that's the conversation we should be having. And that's, I agree with that. I think,
in other words, what's interesting is that people focus on the quote-unquote outpouring of bad taste jokes. What actually you should focus on, and which is really behind the outpouring of bad, is the outpouring of legitimate, honest, real horror stories.
The American economy can afford to pay for your ambulance when you're injured in a car accident. The American economy can afford to pay for a wheelchair or anti-nausea medicine. I mean, doctors are supposed to...
It is one of the great scams. I'm glad you brought up the ambulance thing. I just don't think you know. If you're a 21-year-old who gets hit by a car, right? Whatever. I don't think you know that when you get scraped off the road and taken to the med by the ambulance, you're going to get a giant ass bill. I didn't think I'd get a bill for the ambulance any more than I thought I'd get a bill for the police officer who came to stop traffic.
The scene to write me a ticket.
Why isn't that a public service? It's crazy. The first time it happened to me and I was taken by ambulance, I couldn't believe it. All of a sudden, I get a $5,000 bill. Holy smokes!
Well, but even worse than that, when you're... It doesn't really matter because you don't say to the police officer, could you just put me in the back of the squad car because I can't afford the ambulance. That's not, you're not in a choice mode there.
Right.
There was a beautiful essay by another different emergency room doctor. I don't know why the ER docs are the most eloquent on this at the moment, in the New York Times 2 days ago. And she said, I just discharged a patient who had serious heart problems. And I wanted to admit him, and he was barely capable of conducting a conversation with me. He needed to be in the hospital, and he and his wife decided that their health insurance company wasn't going to cover the stay, and they went home instead. And so there's a considered choice. The ambulance, you're just going to end up screwed. And by the way, why wouldn't the health insurance company cover the ambulance? Like, why? Why would that be? How were you supposed to get to the emergency room after the car accident by yourself? Here's the problem. I'm a capitalist. I love capitalism. I think capitalism is an incredible force for creativity and the elevation of our lives. But I don't want a healthcare system where a company profits by telling me they're not going to pay my medical bills. Somebody has to say no. Yes, that is true. You have to have some regulator. But the person who says no should not profit.
Be motivated advice. Should not be getting a bonus based on that.
The cancer patient gets anti-nausea medicine. Exactly. Okay, we've beaten that one.
Do you want to discuss the Ten Commandments or the polar bear? Give you a choice. You might get to both. Polar bear or Ten Commandments? You said polar bears are must.
We can hold the oldest record of the Ten Commandments till next week because it will still be relevant.
We're about to auction
a marble slab with the Ten Commandments engraved on it. We're going to talk about it next week. This is the fourth item I have queued for next week. But in the northernmost village, in the northernmost settlement of Ontario, Canada, right on Hudson Bay, the kind of place you read about the fur explorers.
Right.
A man and a woman went outside at 5 a.m. last Tuesday, right as we were getting ready to do Fish on Friday local time.
That was their first mistake.
To look for their dog. And there was a polar bear in their driveway. Mm. And the woman slipped and fell. And the polar bear moved to attack the woman. And the husband jumped on the back of the polar bear to prevent him from attacking his
wife.
That's
chivalry. That is brave.
This is in the town of Fort Severn, total population 400 people.
Is it now 398 people?
No, both the man and the woman survived. The man, this is what you don't want in your life besides the polar bear. The man was described as having serious but not life-threatening injuries.
Anyway, I'd take that after an encounter with a neighbor.
If you can beat off the polar bear, we don't know what happened to the dog. A neighbor heard the commotion and came out and shot the polar bear multiple times. And the local wilderness police force came after reports of the gunshots. They found the man, they found the wife. The man was taken to a local medical clinic, no hospitals up there, where he's expected to recover. The polar bear died.
That's a good guy with a gun. Good guy with a gun. Better than the polar bear without the gun.
I think I would bet all 90 families in Fort Severn own a gun. I don't think you live at the edge of complete wilderness without a gun up there. But the CBC consulted a polar bear expert. Mm-hmm. First of all, polar bears don't attack people. This was either a sick polar bear or a very hungry polar bear. Polar bears are not interested in people. Second of all, this is a polar bear expert, a polar bear partisan.
Yeah.
And she said, and I quote, this is the advice portion of the show. If you're attacked by a polar bear, do not play dead. That is a myth. Fight as hard as you can.
Well, there's a very good chance that our readers will be saved by, our listeners will be saved by that.
Someone in the audience.
Do not play dead.
One day think.
Fake fish on Friday, on Tuesday. I'm fighting back.
Don't play dead when the polar bear comes through.
All right, Charles, go deal with the cable guy. Thank you very much. Follow him on Twitter at C Fishman on Twitter or X.
Back from Washington next week.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. It's Charles Fishman with his polar bear wisdom. You can tackle the NFL action on FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers, $150 in bonus bets if you win on your first $5 bet. FanDuel Sportsbook apps give you everything you need to place live bets on the NFL all in one place. So, middle of the game, you got a hunch, check out the latest stats, live play-by-play, and so much more on the same page where you place your wagers. It is FanDuel. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to join today. Get started with $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what's coming up next?
Jeffers is coming next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson and Jason Fitz will join their program today. Tim Murray will be with me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Connor and George today on Gabe Show.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow for Now Work's Done.